Welcome to The Five Things, This Week in Social. This is the Webby award-winning podcast that looks at five stories from social, data, content, AI, e-com, and tech to give you something interesting to say after spending hours scrolling TikTok. If you're a marketer, an advertiser, a creator, or anyone who makes a living using social platforms, then you are going to want to keep listening. We have a great show for you today. First up on the pod, it's Shailene Radinsky. Hello, Shailene.
Hello, Joey. How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. Question for you. If you could have dinner with any fictional character, who would it be?
Ooh, I just finished reading Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. So maybe Evelyn Hugo, if you've read it. She's a very dynamic, interesting character. I'm going to have to go with that one for now.
That's great. And Jada Hines is here. Hello, Jada.
Hi.
Same question for you. If you could have dinner with any fictional character, who would it be?
Not as elaborate as a character from Evelyn Hugo. Have you heard of Kipper the dog?
No.
Oh gosh, it's this old cartoon from Noggin. Last night I was in a like nostalgia wave and I looked up the old cartoon. So first fictional character in my mind is this British, very kind dog. So I'm just going to go with that.
I love that. Well, I'm Joey Scarillo and I would have dinner with Ron Swanson. I think it would be a really good meal. We probably wouldn't say too much, but I have a feeling it would be really fun. All right, friends, here are the five things. First up, Jada tells us about Congress revisiting the TikTok ban amid national security concerns. Then Shailene explains why brands are seeing less engagement on TikTok. Next, Jada tells us about Meta predicting the future. Then Shailene digs into Tarte's brand trips and asks if consumers are just over it. And finally, Jada tells us about the saga of Risa Tisa and the honesty era. All right, friends, let's dive right in. Jada, talk to us about Congress and what's going on with TikTok.
Yes. So last year we touched on its TikTok ban on this show, and we're back to talk some more about it. So on Tuesday, March 5th, U.S. lawmakers introduced the legislation to give China's ByteDance 6 months to divest popular short video app TikTok, or face a ban in the U.S. This concern arises around national security, about Chinese ownership, and American sensitive data on the app. So ByteDance has 165 days to divest TikTok, or it'll be unlawful for app stores like Apple, Google, or other companies to offer TikTok or provide hosting services to apps controlled by ByteDance. Currently, the app is used by over 170 million Americans, and the popularity of it could make it tough for legislation to get this approved as quickly as they would like. Also, ironically, Joe Biden's re-election campaign joined TikTok recently as a strategic way to reach voters. So that's funny. TikTok says that it hasn't and won't share U.S. user data with Chinese government, and a company spokesperson from the app said that this legislation tramples the First Amendment of millions of Americans, and it deprives millions of small business owners on a platform that they rely on to grow and create their jobs. Also, Rep. Kathy McMorris Rogers, who is in favor of the bill, notes that it would prevent foreign adversaries like China from surveilling or manipulating the American people. Of course, from a social influencer perspective, this is scary news for people who have built a platform on TikTok. Oftentimes, I find that TikTok creators sometimes put a lot of their energy or content eggs, so to speak, in one basket. And this could be a wake-up call to start utilizing other platforms more for videos like YouTube or Instagram, who are probably happy to hear this news.
I think it's really interesting that you mentioned Biden joining TikTok. What signal do you think having our president on TikTok while all this is happening in Congress sends, Shailene?
I think it just shows that they're trying to be more involved, have more of a presence on it. I don't think that there's any real hidden intention behind it. I think that it's more of a play for Gen Z and some of our younger voters who will be voting for the first time to show that who we have in office is with the times, so to speak, relevant, and just keeps them top of mind in the election.
So I'm just curious, if TikTok does divest from ByteDance, who do you think could potentially pick up a TikTok, Jada?
That's a good question. What comes to mind is YouTube for me, because it's the most similar app in my head, especially with shorts on the rise as it is, and long form content on TikTok being more popular already. I can see YouTube stepping in. What do you think, Shailene?
Yeah, my immediate thought went to YouTube. I don't think it has such a space in Meta. However, I do see a lot of content alignment between X and TikTok, just purely based on content, the things that people enjoy watching, the same kind of sense of humor, in the same way that they get news. I could see both of those kind of living together. But I think from a purchasing standpoint, YouTube might be what makes the most sense.
Yeah, I think strategically that makes sense. If a Google or a YouTube picked up TikTok, I would be very surprised if Meta did, just because it would cannibalize Reels, which they've put so much investment in. And I think X is maybe a contender, but I just don't know that Elon has the cash flow. But you know what? We'll let people on other podcasts talk about the business case for TikTok. All right, let's stick with TikTok and talk about brands seeing less engagement on the app. This just kind of just keeps getting worse and worse for TikTok here. Shailene, tell us about it.
TikTok has seen a decline in engagement for any kind of brand-sponsored posts over the last year. Last year, it sat at around a little bit over 5.5%. It now sits at around a little over 2.5%. This could come from a number of things, which include more users being on the app, which means more competition, general platform maturity. Brands could also just be producing less engaging content as they try to fit into what trends are going on in the space, as opposed to what works directly for their brand. Not to say that brands should stop posting on TikTok entirely. It used to be a really big space for brand engagement, but it's definitely something to factor into social planning.
Do you see this, Jada, as a bit of a natural plateauing, or do you think this is something that really should set off alarm bells at TikTok?
I see this as a natural plateau. I think influencer fatigue is a real thing that is kind of connected to brand fatigue as well. And I think what people want are just realer interactions online.
Yeah, so what does that mean for brands, Shailene? What do you think brands can do to sort of course correct here?
I think that they stick true to what works for them, stay true to their brand persona. I think that some brands go really out of the way to try and keep up with some of the more native trends that live on the app that just organic users like you and I are creating, versus understanding if that really works and moves the needle for what message they're trying to show and whatever that brand may be, selling a product or using an app, whatever it is. They just need to do what works for them, make sure it feels organic to them, and not try to build something that's not there.
Stick to the plan. Trust the process. All right, Jada, let's move on to thing three. We're just moving and grooving here. Meta predicts the future. I have no idea what this means, so why don't you tell me?
So it's not as crazy as it sounds. In a new blog post on meta.com, the company outlines three predictions for tech transformation 2024 and beyond. The first, which was surprising that they said, was that metaverse hype is dead. So arguably the people who helped bring metaverse to the forefront are also admitting that the focus has shifted from the metaverse and more into AI. Consumers are more interested in virtual and mixed reality. And interestingly, in this space, the fitness and wellness category is on the rise for compelling use cases. But despite consumer trends, I guess that this is their baby and they're committed to using the metaverse too and advancing it. They recently introduced a new demo called Caddy, which lets colleagues collaborate on CAD models together, no matter the distance. So typically CAD or CAD has been limited to seasoned experts in the medical or architectural fields. But with Caddy, they're hoping to sort of level the playing field for educators, students, or designers to create 3D work in a more natural way. Their second prediction is that portable devices are only going to become cooler. And what I mean by that is that they predict that we'll arrive at sort of a tech hybrid model of AI processes and mobile devices, where some tasks are completed by LLMs running on the cloud, while others take place right in the palm of our hands, or even like a cool pair of glasses. The Ray-Ban Meta AI smart glasses have the ability to do things like translate signs into English or share a recipe using only the ingredients that the glasses see in your kitchen. It's all a hands-free, a portable device, and that's what they're thinking we're going to be seeing more of. And their last prediction is that there's going to be more personalized messaging. So Meta thinks that as AI tools grow and become more personalized, people will expect to interact with brands and businesses in more personal ways too. Just to Shailene's point earlier, this prediction is also reflected in Meta's growing business messaging tools. And this allows businesses to send DMs based on responses and questions they get from customers automatically. So an offering like this makes it really easy for small businesses too, and not just the larger big brands, to reach and engage their audiences where they are.
Do you think there's anything being said between the words here? Do you think Meta is trying to divert the attention away from the metaverse because they put so much attention into it. What do you make of these predictions?
I think you bring up a good point, maybe trying to move the attention away a bit. The metaverse AI space is such an interesting space. And I think that a lot of people don't entirely know really what they're in for, what it's all about. I think that it is a little bit, you know, just kind of a lot of words that mean nothing, transparently. I think for people that don't entirely know what's going on, people that don't understand the space entirely, these words don't mean much to them. I don't think that there's a lot of clear explanation. So I think that this is for a very niche audience.
I'm just curious, Jada, what do you think any of these implications have for brands?
That's a good question. I think as far as the prediction that users want a more personalized experience with brands, I think that's something that it's just a general rule that brands should follow in the first place. Ads should feel personal when someone's interacting with them. So I think that's a good takeaway. But as far as the more advanced techie stuff like Caddy or the Ray-Ban glasses, brands should only become invested in tech if it makes sense with their identity, so they don't end up falling into something that feels like a fad and inauthentic.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, we talked a lot about the metaverse on this podcast about 2 years ago, and we were all shocked when Meta changed their name. And here they are saying the metaverse is not as important as they once thought. So kind of interesting, but totally something to keep an eye on. I do think that the tech around these wearables will just get better. And maybe the metaverse was just too far away for us to comprehend right now. All right, let's move on. I'm really excited to talk about this one because I don't know much about it. And I know that Shailene, you are our influencer expert here at Gray. So why don't you talk to us about these brand trips from Tarte?
Tarte embarked on another one of their infamous brand trips this past week, going to Bora Bora. They had 30 influencers arrive. And these trips have always been kind of the target of either praise or really heavy critique just due to the nature of them. So Tarte started doing these trips a long time ago, actually, as a cost-effective way to kind of build brand awareness, create relationships with some of these influencers in the space. And they have found that investment is worth than any media dollars that they could spend. And it's a really great way to, like I said, build those relationships and keep Tarte top of mind for a lot of influencers, especially ones that don't go on the trip. They're more inclined to use some of the products that the brand notices them and maybe invites them to. But the big one, you know, kind of the controversy around this trip in particular was that everybody got flown on private jets, and it just felt a little out of touch. You know, there was caviar on the plane and people creating lots of out of touch TikToks, let's call them. And a lot of people really found this Bora Bora trip specifically to be more out of touch than the others. A lot of the commentary around it was that they were influenced to buy anything except for Tarte following a lot of these videos. And I think that it's interesting because from a brand standpoint and an agency standpoint, we understand all of the work that goes behind this. We know that Tarte is most likely not paying for a bulk of this trip. A lot of it comes from other partner sponsorships and the hotel wanting to gain exposure as well. But I think that to the naked eye who doesn't know anything really about this kind of space is just seeing this incredibly lavish and over the top trip for people that, not to say that they don't deserve, but people that could likely do that kind of trip on their own anyway. So it's an interesting back and forth conversation that's been going on social for the last week, but really since Tarte has started doing these trips.
Jada, do you think that these trips are out of touch? And what do you make of these brands asking so much of these influencers?
I think these trips are out of touch. I remember there was a scandal a couple years ago where a lot of users were upset that on these brand trips, it didn't reflect diversity at all. And the types of people that were invited on these trips all looked the same. And so from even a climate perspective, everyone flying on private jets to the outlandish caviar to the lack of diversity, it all, I think, is starting to leave a really bad taste in consumers' mouth. And initially, Tarte saw a lot of success and they started doing these trips as an inexpensive campaign. But now I think people are sort of seeing through the fluff and not relating to it at all.
Is it too much branding, Shailene? Does it not even feel, I feel like the word authentic was probably gone a long time ago, but is it too much branding?
I think that the trips have become more than just about launching a new product or anything like that. I think that it does go a little over the top with the branding. I think that the trips have lost the meaning of why they started in the first place, which was to promote new products, show how you could use them in these new environments. But I think with this trip, we've seen really just an excess of really lavish activities, luxury meal, really over the top vacationing versus what they're actually there for. So I think that in that sense, it does feel overbranded, but I also think that they've gotten lost in the sauce, so to speak.
Yeah, looking at these pictures, it kind of reminds me of like a Netflix dating show. Just, I'm also coming to this as I had never heard of Tarte or this trip before. So I'm looking at these pictures and it just feels very excessive. I don't know. It does. It feels very out of touch, Jada. I agree.
Yeah, I think it's outdated too. But
yeah. All right. Let's jump into our fifth and final thing here. This is a saga that I only recently heard about. So I really want to hear about it from you, Jada. But tell us about Risa Tisa and what we're calling the honesty era.
Yes. So if you've been on TikTok recently, you might have come across maybe a 50-part story called Who TF Did I Marry by user Risa Tisa. And it is a very long recount of her experience marrying and then divorcing a man who had lied to her throughout the entirety of their relationship about who he was, where he worked, his family, his friends, everything that you could possibly think of regarding to identity of this particular man was a lie. So the series was posted over a 4-day time frame. Most videos in the series are 10 minutes long, and the total watch time for her 50-part Who Like TF Did I Marry was well over 7 hours. Since, she has received over 10 million views, thousands of comments applauding her honesty and bravery, and exclusive interviews with major platforms like The Cut. And although this is a really wild story, I will say I didn't watch the 50 parts, but I watched enough to get a really good grasp of what Risa is talking about. And although this is a really wild story, she's not the first person on TikTok to do a tell-all to strangers. A few months ago, there was this stitch trend where people added their craziest stories on a really mundane video of just one user who said she disliked store-bought pesto. And then people stitched it and said, you know what else I disliked? And then they went to a long recount of whatever crazy story that they had to share. And you see also from a sort of influencer perspective, when you think about the rise to fame of people like Monet McMichael or Emma Chamberlain or Call Her Daddy, they rose to fame through their honesty and through their candor. It sort of made consumers view them in a different light because they weren't like completely branded yet. And as TikTok promotes longer videos and users become saturated with branded content, I think honesty and storytelling, especially from people who are initially non-influencers, just comes across as more relatable and more legitimate. And it's easier to see yourself in people who are doing the story times, who are not yet on the red carpet or something like that.
I love that Oh Susie trend. That is very funny. Thanks for bringing that up. This story really brings up a lot. I mean, it does feel, it's very captivating. I think it's very interesting to hear just someone's horrible story, but what's the bigger story or takeaway here for TikTok, Shailene?
I think that it shows that people love to connect around one specific topic. I think that with the Who the F Did I Marry, it brought a lot of people together waiting for the next part, all talking about, you know, the part that they had recently watched. I equate that to the Wonka experience in Glasgow that went horribly, but brought X together in a way that has not been brought together in a long time. And I think that sense of community over something funny, over something maybe relatable, maybe not, but just something that people can talk about and connect on outside of whether they may or may not have anything in common is always a fun thing. And I think that when brands and influencers alike are looking to create some really engaging things, they can start to look at things that would bring other people together.
Yeah, I mean, whenever there's, you know, these like lightning in a bottle moments, we've seen it on so many different platforms, right? Like to your point, X, we're seeing it on TikTok. We've seen it on Netflix shows. We've seen it with podcasts, with Serial a long time ago. So, you know, we have these moments where it's almost like you can't predict when it's going to happen, but it sort of rallies around the entire proverbial community and water cooler moment of wanting to know what happens next. All right. Well, I think that does it for us this week, guys. We did it. This was fun. Thank you for joining me. If you don't already, be sure to follow us, share us, review us, like us, subscribe to us, or write to us with your questions, comments, concerns, points of interest, or complaints. Or just send us a thing you want us to discuss. You can do all of that by emailing us at podcasts@gray.com. Connect with us on Spotify by sharing your thoughts on the show. Just look for the Q&A field. If you're listening to us on YouTube, subscribe to Gray's channel at Famously Effective to get the latest episode of the show. If you want the five things in your inbox, sign up for the newsletter. You can subscribe to that through the link in the description of this episode. Topics discussed on this show are written and researched by the teams at Gray New York and Gray Midwest. This podcast is produced by Samantha Geller and Jada Hines. Post-production by Amanda Fuentes, Guy Rosemarin, Kyle St. Agathe, and Ned Martin at Gramercy Park Studios. Gray's chief communications officer is Vonda LePage. The Five Things is hosted and executive produced by me, Joey Scarillo. That's it for us. Thank you, listener. And as always, please be social. Gray is a global creative agency whose mission is putting famously effective ideas into the world. Check out more at gray.com.